most important thing in life will always be the
movie squad.
Salute, mi familia.
Salute indeed, and another sensational year. Sensational year. Well, it's another year, and it's another sensational episode. That's where the sensational lies of the Movie Squad Awards. We're at the end of a year, another end of cinema, and my name is Tristan Fidler.
My name is Simon Murata.
And we are joined, as we have to, it's contractually obligated, to have our one of the great members of the Movie Squad universe, the movie squad.
The MSU.
Yeah, that's right. Janice Larek on the phone. Janice, how are you going?
Oh, I'm so well. Great to hear from you again, Tristan and Simon.
And it's a pleasure to have you, you know, on board with looking back at the year that was of cinema, whether it be in cinemas or streaming, but doing it in our own, you know, cockeyed way with the with the Movie Squad Awards, our infamous categories that that will take us through some of the gems and some of the, I guess...
What's the opposite of a gem?
Coal? Hunks of coal? I don't know. Yeah, so are you excited about this year's awards, Janice?
Well, I'm always excited. I think, you know, the top 10 lists of every year are just so boring. I think this is an opportunity to really appreciate the special moments in those underseen films.
Yeah, definitely. And looking ahead without giving away too much, you're just not going to see films like Halloween Kills and Gunpowder Milkshake talked about in the top tens. So it's nice to give everyone a chance to collect a gong in their own special way.
Exactly, and to celebrate the achievements of films that perhaps didn't achieve as much as they could have.
Well, we're just going to get straight into it and maybe have a chat with when we hear the winners. But you're going to start things off with a good place to start is with a title, and you're starting with the first category.
Yes, I absolutely am. So we have three nominations in the best title category, and I'm going to have to take a deep breath before I read these out because they are not only the best, but they're also probably the longest I've ever seen. So nomination one is Preparations to Be Together for an Unknown Period of Time, the Hungarian neurosurgeon romance film. Nomination number two is We're All Going to the World's Fair, which is Jane Schoenbrunn's coming-of-age horror film. And the last nomination is, and now I'm going to take a deep breath, Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, a sketch for a popular film. No one understands that the world is sinking on the ocean of time that is so very deep and that is infested with those huge crocodiles called decrepitude and death. And exhale.
I think you deserve,
well done. Yeah, that was very impressive.
For that.
Yeah. Well, I did practice before we went there. So that last one, for those who haven't seen it, I haven't seen it. It's the Romanian, I think, sex tape legal drama, something like that. And look, I think, you know, it sounds fantastic. I really want to see this one. And what a fantastic title. How could you stay away? Best title goes to Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, a sketch for a popular film. No one understands that the world is sinking on the ocean of time that is so very deep and that's infested with those huge crocodiles called decrepitude and death.
And for what it's worth, well, firstly, a round of applause for that. For what it's worth, that film made Tristan and I, our collective movie squad top 10, which at least points to, you know, our top 10 being a bit more unique than the kinds you'll see from, what, the National Board of Review? Come on.
And actually, that's a title so long that I didn't know there was more title to be said. I didn't even know about that last part. So well done, Janice, and well done to Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, etc.
Yes.
So next is your category, Simon.
Yes, worst title. Now, these are all mercifully short, thankfully. But the nominees, as selected by Janice, Tristan, and I, are Gunpowder Milkshake, Halloween Kills, and The Scary of 61st. Now, even though The Scary of 61st was my submission, I think the real winner ultimately is Halloween Kills. It is a title that doesn't really make sense in the context of the movie and is kind of annoying. That's my take on it. Tristan, I don't know if you want to defend Halloween Kills.
I do like it as a title because it follows, you know, the previous film was just called Halloween. And so they could have just kept it going by calling it Halloween 2, the third film to be called that. But it just makes me think of the joke from the Noah Baumbach film, Kicking or Screaming, where they try to list all the Friday the 13th movies and someone mistakenly guesses Jason Kills, and someone replies, Jason Kills, Jason Kills in every one of those suck movies. And so it is with Michael Myers. He kills in every one of them. Why is this one? Well, he kills basically a whole town, spoiler alert. So
yeah, I still don't quite get it. I like the idea of like just adding an E to every Halloween sequel, you know? So Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.
That's a good, I think, look,
the next
David Gordon Green, get on the phone. We've got ideas for Halloween Ends, the next one. Thank you, Simon. And are you happy with that winner, Janice?
Oh, yeah. I have so many problems with this title. I mean, Halloween doesn't kill. Michael Myers kills. I mean, it's just meh. That's my feeling. Meh.
Fantastic. Well, the next one is from my category is Best Film That You Watch to be part of the conversation. And we're the only two, me and you, Janice, who threw in titles for this, but I think it applies to you, Simon, as well, because
I don't watch films to be part of the conversation. I don't want conversations with anyone except you and Janice about films. So I opted out of this category.
So we have Nitram, the award-winning Australian film based on the life of Martin Bryant. And I put down Old, the M. Night Shyamalan film about the beach that makes you old. Now, with these two, I love Old, but I think it deserves an award in another category, so I'm going to give it to Nitram, because when I finally watched this film, it did feel a little bit like I was having to do a bit of homework. So congratulations to Nitram, another award to your bow.
Yes, it swept the AFL, the Actor Awards, so but this is the one you want.
Yes, it is the best film to be watched as part of the conversation.
Yeah, and it certainly did spark a conversation. It sparked a conversation when it got funding. It sparked a conversation when it was released or not released, as the case may be, in Tasmania. And then it sparked a conversation again when it won those awards. So one big conversation around this movie, absolutely.
For a movie that probably 95 people have seen. Let's face it.
I don't know if it was a box office burner. But look, it's there on Stan for anyone to watch and be a part of the continuing conversation. The next category is for you, Janice.
Yes, this is our most forgettable streaming release of 2021. And I think that this is quite ironic that I'm reading this category, because I don't actually subscribe to any streaming services. And I've just been holding out even through the pandemic. I'm very proud of it.
Are you a cord cutter? What's the version of that for streaming services?
I don't know. I mean, I managed to keep up with films here and there. But look, I mean, we've got two nominations in this category, and I still managed to do a nomination because I was asked to review this particular film. But the first nomination is Malcolm and Marie, which is nominated by Tristan. And the second one is News of the World, which is I suppose you describe it as a Western road movie starring Tom Hanks. So for me, because I haven't seen Malcolm and Marie, and maybe Tristan, you can fill us in on this one shortly, but I'm going to nominate News of the World just because, I mean, it's perfectly fine. It was a lovely Western. It had Tom Hanks in it being a dad, and, you know, Tom Hanks being a dad can never go wrong, but it was just, again, a bit meh, and I only just managed to recall it to put it on this list. So News of the World is my award winner. But Tristan, I just wanted to ask you, why Malcolm and Marie? Why is this one so forgettable?
Well, there's probably actually more forgettable ones, because this one does have the benefit of being annoying and thus memorable in its own way. But I don't know, it's just funny that there was a big conversation around this film when it came out, particularly on Letterboxd. And as the year's gone on, no one's really talked about it since. It just sort of came and went. And that was on Netflix. It was with Zendaya and John David Washington. And was basically one of the many films that came out that was shot during kind of COVID. And it's one of those films that you wonder, yeah, was all worth it to shoot under this circumstances, to spend time with a couple just arguing in glorious black and white.
See, I think Janice has made the right choice here, though, because I think Malcolm and Marie, I think that's the worst film of the year. So by definition, it can't be forgettable. News of the World, though, I've got to tell you, Janice, you know there's another Tom Hanks streaming release where he plays a sort of dad to a, well, in that case, a robot. And I don't even remember what the film's called.
Isn't it Finch or something?
Finch or something like that, or Fletcher or... Yeah, so News of the World wins by proxy, but I think there is another more forgettable Tom Hanks streamer.
This is the irony of this category. Yes. It requires us to recall the movie. Yeah.
If you're nominated, almost by definition, you shouldn't be in the category.
It is called Finch, and probably, yeah, Finch and News of the World could be a double that you do after you've eaten all the Christmas lunch and just want something to fall asleep to. So there you go. Simon, you got the next category.
Yes.
And this is a category that takes us in lots of different directions.
And what I love about this category is we've had it every year since 2018 because there's always a call for it. The three nominees for eeriest use of de-aging technology or de-aging are, well, this is a bit of a spoiler, is it? Nah, I will say it. Harold Ramis returning in Ghostbusters Afterlife. the sequence in Coming to America with young Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall. Oh. Here we have a bit of an alternative. The fake voice of Anthony Bourdain in Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain. And the casting of younger actors as the Sopranos crew in The Many Saints of Newark. I think, by definition, it's eeriest. I want to go with Many Saints of Newark, but it's not creepy. It's just dumb and looks bad. I think the Anthony Bourdain example is the eeriest, most creeping into a future where every person who's ever passed on will be repurposed for cinematic exploits. Janice, I haven't seen Roadrunner, but I'm familiar with this. Do you want to talk about why it unsettled you so?
It's unsettling because it didn't unsettle me. So for those who don't know about this, Roadrunner is the documentary about the late, food journalist and writer Anthony Bourdain. And there was some controversy because they actually used artificial voice technology to make it sound like Anthony Bourdain was narrating his own diaries. So it was the words that he had, in fact, written, but they didn't actually have audio of him saying those words in his voice. So they generated it artificially. And so there was a bit of buzz around that. And is it okay? Is it acceptable? But on the one hand, he did write those words. But on the other hand, he's passed away. And is that weird and creepy? Anyway, I did see the documentary. I have a lot to say about it that has nothing to do with this. It's quite an interesting film. But the weird thing was I had no idea which parts were fake and which parts were real. And as you say, Simon, I think it just goes to show that, we are reaching this point where perhaps, the voices and the faces of people might be replaceable. So it was eerie in how it wasn't eerie, I would say.
And particularly when it's just like, from what I've heard, I'm not seeing this film, but it relates to some emails or something that are read out, and it's just like, well, why not just get one of his, beloved actor friends to just read it out? There's so many different ways you could do it without going into this direction. And then, yeah, spoiler alert, the presence of Harold Ramis is brought to life at the end of Ghostbusters Afterlife. And I think, yeah, actors, any creative people are going to have to review their wills, get some, legal stuff going on to ensure that their image and voice are protected from, the big corporations. So there you go. Congratulations to Roadrunner.
Yeah, congrats.
A film about Anthony Bourdain. Now, I'm going to be quick about this one because I added this category, but the category is the most memed out movie of 2021. And, considering my lack of connection to TikTok and memes in general, this is just on the basis of the two that I've seen. But the nominees are Old, M. Night Shyamalan's film about the beach where people get old, and Dune, which has scored a few memes that I've seen, particularly Jessica, Rebecca Ferguson saying, "You use the voice," and the many frames devoted to that. I'm just going to give it straight up to Old. I really enjoyed just people clowning on the premise of this film, and that made me want to see it all the more. Just the idea of a beach where people get old and the ways in which people memed that out and turned it into, I don't know, just another way to appreciate this madcap film. So congratulations to M. Night. Now, I love this category, and you're going to read
this one. It's Janice's category.
Yeah, Janice, this is your category.
Oh, Thank you so much. I love this category. One of my favorite genres of films of all time. So this is the award for the best guy cry movie / daddest movie. the films that you take your dad to, the films that you have a little manly weep to when you watch the male melodrama genre. So we have, of course, Tristan's nomination, which is Another Round, Thomas Vinterberg's drama about a group of fellas who decide to get a little bit drunk every day and see how it improves their lives. We have Pig, the film by Michael Sarnowski, starring Nicolas Cage. So a film about a retired chef and his relationship with a truffle pig. And lastly, we have, of course, the Bond film No Time to Die, of course, the last installment in the Daniel Craig series in the franchise. So, look, I think this one has to go to Another Round, Thomas Vinterberg's film and Tristan's nomination, just because, you know, this is a film about middle age, really. It's about the feeling that time is passing you by. It's about that feeling that maybe that, you know, you're not getting the most out of life. And I think that's a very profound feeling. And also, it's also a film about relationships between fellas. And I think that kind of material, you know, middle-aged fellas feeling they're not getting the most out of life, getting together and trying something new and seeing where it takes them and what it teaches them, I think that's classic guy cry material. What do you think about this one, Tristan?
Well, you know, it's definitely, you say, middle-aged, and, you know, it definitely struck a chord with me. But it's also a film, you know, that ends in a very joyous way. We've talked to, well, this might be another category, actually. I shouldn't step on it. Yeah, definitely. And particularly as well, it won the Best Foreign International Picture at the Academy Awards. Thomas Vinterberg's acceptance speech also, like, was another just guy cry moment, particularly the tragic circumstances involving his one of his family members dying during the film, and hearing the actors talk about how they had to kind of, you know, help him and pull him together to finish this film. So it's guy cries on so many levels.
Janice, are you looking forward to the English language remake?
No.
Only if they hire Mads Mikkelsen again, right?
Yeah. Oh, are they going to?
Probably
not.
Have an insight? I don't have an inside track on this one, I'm afraid.
I was just going to say, Simon, you disappoint me.
Sorry.
If Mads Mikkelsen was in it, I'd at least be curious to see how it played in a different context. But otherwise, no, it was great. First time round, don't need to see it again.
What about if the other three members were played by Ed Helms, Bradley Cooper, and Zach Galifianakis?
Well, then Justin Bartha has to play the Mads Mikkelsen character. I'm sorry, we can't get out of the hangover foursome.
Well, we've got the next category, and this is your domain, Simon. Take it away.
Yes, I'm glad to have the category of juiciest accent choice, especially because I've got a hoarse voice, so my throat is giving up on me as we speak. But the three nominees for juiciest accent are The House of Gucci, sight unseen, because I don't believe any of us have seen this movie yet. Janice, you can correct me if you've caught up with it. We have Josh Lawson as Kano in Mortal Kombat, and we have Ray Winstone doing whatever he was doing. I can't even remember. I just remember thinking, this is terrible, in Black Widow. But I'm going to go with The House of Gucci because you've got Lady Gaga going broad. Adam Driver, who we know, it's documented, has a terrible Italian accent from Silence. And then Jared Leto doing the most. He also could have been a nominee for The Little Things, where he wasn't doing an accent, but just choices. He is the definition of what are all the wrong choices that an actor can make when performing. So House of Gucci wins this category.
Fantastic.
I'm super keen to see this one. I just want to jump in. However, I am angry about Josh Lawson missing out on this one. I thought that was the juiciest Australian accent I've ever heard, and it didn't even make me mad. I was really... You know that overcooked Australian accent that's just in so many movies? Well, in Mortal Kombat, I was like... Yes, give me that overcooked. Well,
Captain Boomerang did it first. Sorry, if Jai Courtney beats you to the punch, then something's gone wrong.
Now, I'm excited to do this next category because I think that we've got, probably maybe, like, there are some nominations that had to be a little later. There were so many nominations for this category this year. I think it was, a strangely weirdest sex scene kind of year. We've got this weirdest sex scene, and we've got Agatha in the car in Titan, and I don't think that's, you know, the only weird sex scene in that movie, but that's the one that's representative. We have the We Really Love One Another musical sex scene, where Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard sing to each other while having sex in Annette. We have the very confronting sex tape opening of Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn. And then, I like this, this is your nomination, Janice, the magic sash handjob scene from The Green Knight, which, yeah, all sorts of fluids in that movie. So this is huge, and I'm not sure where to put my hat upon. But
I'm surprised it's this early in the awards ceremony. Yeah. I thought this was a closer for sure.
Oh, I look... If I will just have to say, I'm going to go with Annette for some reason, because it was just weird. It was just weird to see them sing and have sex. And I mean, I know that other ones were more graphic and confronting, but I think that one was just kind of the most just awkward and uncomfortable and strangely compelling at the same time. So I don't know how the winner strikes you both. What were your choices? Or
I think that's a good choice. I think, look, anyone could have walked away from this category a winner. But I think that film is so discomforting in a way that I didn't anticipate. I didn't really like the film, but that sequence in particular has this kind of, you know, ghost-like kind of reverie to it, that when it suddenly becomes explicit, even I, who likes to think I have a pretty strong stomach, was taken aback by it. Janice, how did you feel?
Well, I haven't actually seen Annette, much to my shame. It's one of those films that I've been waiting to see it in the cinema, because obviously I'm in Melbourne, I've been in lockdown. So it's definitely on my list, and I have been forewarned that it's pretty wild. But look, you know, I think with a category like weirdest sex scene, I mean, this, it just gives me so much joy every year. And how lucky have we been to have so many weird sex scenes to choose from?
You need you need an in memoriam like montage for the weird sex scenes. That's what we need when we finally go virtual for our ceremony.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll be at leisure next week, so maybe that can be something, a little holiday activity.
Yes, a fan cam finally from Janice.
I did just want to give a shout out to The Green Knight and that very interesting magic sash hand job. That, you know, that magic sash. Who would have thought the role that it would play in that particular epic chivalric adventure? And my goodness, it really got around. So yeah, that was the sash was put to
work in that film.
Yep, never a hardworking sash we've ever found in cinema. So,
all right, Janice, this next category is yours, and this is a good one too.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Sorry, I was just getting a bit carried away with the last category. Okay, so this is best/weirdest death scene. So again, some really excellent nominations. We've got the prison fight in Malignant. We've got the Hail Rajma in VHS 94. Now, I haven't actually seen that one, so I hope I pronounced that correctly. We've got Trevor decapitated with a bookshelf in Salem. And lastly, The Producers in I Blame Society, directed by Gillian Wallace Horvat, I believe, that one. So, look, I think I'm going to be completely, you know, self-oriented here and just nominate and select my particular one, which was the bookshelf decapitation from Seance. Now, I know that you fellas saw this film and that you quite liked it, I believe. Look, I probably wasn't as taken with it. And there was a very weird death sequence where a person is, I guess, has their head sheared off by the weight of a large falling bookshelf. And I just remember thinking, that bookshelf isn't heavy enough to take something off. It took me out of the movie at a really crucial moment.
Maybe if it was like every shelf had infinite jest on it, then I could believe a decapitation could possibly happen.
Yeah, a couple of Ulysses, you know, all unread, of course, you know, or like the first few pages read. But that would be my selection. I don't know if anybody wants any honourable mentions in this one, Tristan or Simon.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that's a great one. It's definitely, I mean, yeah, I like that film, but I did love that it escalated from kind of moody, eeriness to just full-on action horror, much like the director's previous screenplays for things like Your Next. But yeah, Hail Ratma, one of the stories in VHS Tracking, has a great ending to it that was part of the death scene nomination. And also The Prison Fighter Malignant, I think, is just a moment where, I know for you, Simon, it was a moment where a film that was quite bad actually became interesting.
Yes, yeah. As I texted Tristan after I saw that sequence, I said, this movie has been bad, and it's still bad, but now I like it. So that's how I felt about The Malignant. But Hail Ratma, I think, is the that's the underdog. That's the one that people will look to in years past and go, how did that not win weirdest death scene in the Movie Squad Awards? All right,
because you put me in charge.
No, that's fair. That's how, look, you can't argue with the voting system. It's still better than the HFPAs. My category now is Most Threateningly Sexy Supporting Actor. And just remember that phrasing, threateningly sexy. The nominees are Ana de Armas in No Time to Die, Chris Messina in I Care a Lot, and Alicia Vikander in The Green Knight. Now, I have to go with Chris Messina in I Care a Lot, because even though Alicia Vikander is threatening, sash in hand in The Green Knight, Chris Messina is the most intimidating of those three, I believe, and he has this incredible collection of suits
yes.
that he looks spectacular in that film and is so ferocious. And I was so disappointed to see him waylaid so early, not in a spoilery way, but just narratively. I think that movie is pretty empty, but Chris Messina really brought a lot to it.
Congratulations, Chris Messina. Probably my favorite part of that movie, which I didn't enjoy either, but like it's the suits, but it's also his kind of manner. Like he gives off a very sleazy, confident manner, and you wish you could just watch a whole film about him. So great work there. I'm conscious of the time, so we've got a few other categories to get through. So I'm just going to dive right into mine, which is the most annoying character in 2021. So we had Jared Leto as the potential serial killer in the film The Little Things, starring Rami Malek and Denzel Washington. And what do you know? Rami Malek is also nominated for the villain in No Time to Die. We have Malcolm and Marie from Malcolm and Marie. And then, I like this one from you, Janice, the mob in Halloween Kills. The collective that seems to, act as one body, one
represented
thing.
By Anthony Michael Hall, of course.
These are great nominations, but I'm just going to have to go with Jared Leto, because even though I made this nomination, I forgot about it until Simon reminded me earlier in this podcast, and I was just like, yeah, every choice he made just like was skin crawling and not in the way that he wanted. He is just a terrible actor. We got to revoke his license somehow, but we have House of Gucci to look forward to next year and Mobius, so thank you, cinema. But congratulations, Jared Leto, and I would say runner-up, definitely the mob. their behavior was untenable, and maybe they got what they deserved in Halloween Kills, Janice.
Oh yeah, they sure did. yep. No spoilers though. But look, I think this is another great category that we're about to do, which is best dance sequence. And I think we've had a few this year that are really excellent. So of course, first nomination is Mads Mikkelsen at the end of Another Round, a fabulous dance sequence from a professionally trained dancer. We've got the firemen dancing in Titane, so Julia Durkinau's car film, I guess. I'm not going to go there. We've got the Jamie Dornan solo dance on the beach in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. And lastly, we've got my nomination, which was Bo Burnham dancing to Paris Hilton's fantastic hit, Stars Are Blind, in A Promising Young Woman. Now, I'm just going to talk a bit about my nomination. So I'll just say that that scene in that movie reintroduced this song to my life, and I am very grateful. But I think it has to go to Mads Mikkelsen at the end of Another Round. Such a beautiful, transcendent moment. It was funny. It was delightful. It was also bittersweet and sad in many ways. So definitely Mads Mikkelsen for best dance sequence.
Another Round is running away with it. It's becoming asleep almost. But I can't argue with that choice. Not at all. All right. Category next up is most notable cameo in a movie, and not all cameos are created equal, as we'll find out. The nominees are Hugh Dennis in No Time to Die, Jim Cummings in Halloween Kills, and Jim Cummings, of course, being the indie writer and star of films such as Thunder Road and The Wolf of Snow Hollow. J.K. Simmons, albeit wasted, in Ghostbusters Afterlife. And we have Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Black Widow, but also wasted, or, you know, these are sort of bad examples, according to Janice and Tristan, who've put them forward. So we've got two preferred cameos, two bad cameos. I'm going to go with the best cameo, and it's the one that made me go, oh, this film might be good, and it's Jim Cummings in Halloween Kills. Unfortunately, he isn't in it for long, hence the title cameo, but I like his manner. I like that he only plays cops, and I like to think that he just owns a cop outfit that he brings to set whenever he's starring in a film.
Particularly the two films he's starred and directed in, he plays cops. So for 5 minutes of Halloween Kills, it's like you're watching a Jim Cummings movie because yes, he's basically in that zone. So, yeah, I think the congratulations to Jim Cummings. Now, I'm just going to skip into my category. And basically, movies you felt were an instant rewatchable. Now, the one that I put forward was The Kid Detective, a film that Simon and I have talked about throughout the year. But your nomination, Janice, was the Ben Wheatley film In the Earth, which unfortunately was dumped onto iTunes in Perth cinemas here. But I'm willing to give it to your nomination, Janice. Wow. I'm going to say In the Earth. I have seen this film. I don't know if I entirely agree with it, but I think there is a moment in it where I really laughed out loud, and it could have gone into the weirdest death scene as well in here. That and I think maybe this is an instant rewatchable if you take in the third act alone. But I'd like to hear what you think about this film, Janice.
Look, I just think, I mean, I perhaps it didn't quite go the way that I thought it would, and plus Ben Wheatley's other movies, you know, are fantastic. And however,
some of them, Janice, some of them are fantastic.
The ones that I choose to read are fantastic. However, I just felt that there was quite a lot happening in this movie, and I don't think I got it all first time round. And I also saw it at home, and I think it would have been great in a cinema if it was really loud. So that's why it's on my instant rewatchable list. Look, maybe there's nothing more there, maybe there isn't more to catch, but I would like to give it another go, for sure.
So there you go. That's the winner, and even though I don't fully 100% agree with it, that's the way awards go sometimes. Even when I give the award, it's not to the film I want, but there you go.
Not enough rewatchable movies for a year.
Yeah. Well, Janice, you've got a big category now, so if you need any help, let us know, but take it away.
Yeah, I'm not going to perform this. Maybe I'll perform them a little bit. So this is our best quote. So first best quote, Desert Power, Oscar Isaac from Dune. We've got Evil Dies Tonight, Five Mob, Halloween Kills. We've got We Don't Get a Lot of Things to Really Care About, Nicolas Cage from Pig. I wouldn't consider myself an ethical person, but I am fair, Lady Gaga from the House of Gucci trailer. We've got We're Going to Have a Dramatic Reenactment, Oscar Isaac from The Card Counter. And lastly, we've got my nomination, apologies everyone, Get Over Here, Hiroyuki Sanada from Mortal Kombat, of course, in the role of Scorpion. So look, this is a tough one. I'm not sure who I'm going to give it to. I think I think we might go with Desert Power, just because I think that particular phrase was said a lot of times. I think they were really proud of the whole concept of Desert Power in Dune, you know, and I think it's an important concept to the movie. However, I think so many fantastic quotes here. I think there's a reason why I wouldn't consider myself an ethical person, but I am fair, made the list there, and just entices me to see that movie. And that's a very provocative statement. So let's go with Desert Power from the big blockbuster Dune.
It's good to recognise Oscar Isaac. He had two nods in this category.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he should win an award for best beard. That was an excellent.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think on the category cards for 2022, best beard. You're on next, Simon. What's your category?
We have the category of most surprising movie that you thought would be bad, but it was good. And the nominees are, and we each have one, and I think that's fair to assign. Tristan, you nominated Halloween Kills. Janice, you nominated Lamb. And I nominated The Suicide Squad, the James Gunn reboot, sequel, whatever you want to call it. So I'm going to give it to mine, The Suicide Squad, because even though it was critically adored, I only caught up with it a couple of weeks ago, and I still thought, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. It's DC. It's the Suicide Squad. It's James Gunn, whose shtick has kind of played out. And you know what? I thought it was great. I really found it very funny. I thought the narrative was interesting. I liked the characters that were introduced. I thought the action was spectacular. I liked it a lot more than many of the leading Oscar contenders of this year. That's not to say it would make my top 20 or maybe even my top 30, but I did really enjoy the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, sometimes with these action films, they start off strong and they get like a bit worse, whereas I felt this was a movie that actually picked up as it went along and actually was very good by the third act. So there you go. And I'm going to do the flip side of this category, which is the most disappointing movie. You thought it would be good, but it was not. And how the cinema does disappoint us. And we've all got a category here. We've all got a nomination, I should say. Mine was a film I was really looking forward to all year, Last Night in Soho by Edgar Wright, his kind of giallo Hitchcockian thriller. Janice, you put down Candyman, the kind of remake/reboot of the 90s horror villain by Clive Barker. And then Simon, Shang-Chi, the critically acclaimed and successful Marvel action film that has just hit Disney Plus. Now, this is tough, and it's hard not to go with my own nomination, but after giving one award to a film I didn't fully believe in, I'm just going to give it to the one I was fully disappointed by, Last Night in Soho, a film that I think left many people a bit kind of, well, just kind of thinking, well, I think this year, both with the Sparks Brothers and Last Night in Soho, I was just kind of wondering about Edgar Wright. Does he really have it anymore? So there you go. But I'd like to, you know, I know that we got short on time, but if you'd either like to comment on your nominations.
Well, I'll just say very briefly, Janice, very, very briefly, I didn't have high expectations for Shang-Chi. Because, as I said, I didn't have high expectations for the Suicide Squad. But I figured that there was a floor, as there is a ceiling, to how good a Marvel film can be or how bad a film can be. And it turns out there is no floor. or rather, Shang-Chi has set the new floor, because I thought that was actually god-awful.
Oh, dear. I mean, I just want to say about this category that it doesn't mean that it's, like, the worst movie ever. Or in this case, I mean, I put down Candyman. I think it, you know, had high expectations around this one. I think it was a really important cultural moment to make this film again. And I think it took a big aim and didn't quite hit the mark. Still worth a watch, though, I would say. Although might not say the same for something like Shang-Chi, so, which is unfortunate. But yeah, no, I think Last Night in Soho is a worthy winner for this category.
And we're close to the end of this podcast, and so we get into categories about endings, and I look to you, Janice, over the airwaves phone connection.
Yes, absolutely. So we've got some great nominations in this category, which is Best Ending. So we've got Censor, Prentice Bailey Bond's film about the video nasty era in the 80s. We've got St. Maud, the British horror film. We've got I Blame Society. We've got, again, nominated in another category, Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, nominated by Tristan. We have The Kid Detective, also nominated by Tristan. And lastly, Another Round. Yeah, sweeping the awards in this series tonight. Now, I mean, fantastic end. I love the end of Censor. I love the end of St. Maud. I just think for me it has to go to Another Round. That's such a fantastic moment. It's a moment of energy. And I just love, the other thing I really love about Another Round as a film is that it's about relationships between teachers and students, which is something that's quite close to my heart as well. And that's a moment between a group of teachers and students, and that part of it really warms my heart. So I don't know if I'm showing too much favouritism here, guys, but I think Another Round's the winner for this one. What do you think?
No, that's good. And I like that it finishes on a freeze frame, as does Bad Luck Banging, but a very different kind of freeze frame. And that's a fun private joke for people, for the 14 people that have seen Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn. But Another Round, yeah, I'm happy for it to take three prizes in this year's ceremony.
Fantastic, sensational. And yeah, an ending that I'd already heard about. It was built up and it met my expectations. So fantastic work. We have the flip side and not as many nominations, surprisingly.
But no, that's right. Well, I might throw a third one in there just to flesh it out a little bit. But the nominees for worst ending are Black Widow from Janice, VHS 94 from Tristan, and I'll add a movie that I just saw last night, Licorice Pizza. worst ending, maybe that's a bit over the top, but maybe just a deflating ending, we'll put it that way. But nonetheless, I'm going to go with VHS 94 because I loved that movie. The first two acts are fantastic. Ultimately, it kind of falls down a little bit towards the end, and then the wraparound story, as is resolved in the final scene, is just shocking. Like, it's really poor form. So VHS 94, sadly, still highly recommend the film, absolutely. But worst ending, yeah, that's a deserving winner.
You can stream this on Shudder. It's the only one of the anthology series that I saw, but I really enjoyed it. But yeah, it just you can't imagine how bad it just like, and particularly with the setup was so good and just, anyway. Congratulations. Now, we've got a few little individual awards. I want to give an award to the actor. This is the Caleb Landry Jones Award, the actor who was in Everything Award for 2021. And I have to give it to Thomasin McKenzie, obviously the lead in Last Night in Soho, also was in Old, The Justice of Bunny King. But even just as the sixth cast member who just shows up in the second act of The Power of the Dog, I was just like, that you can't make a movie without her in it. So congratulations, Thomasin McKenzie. You are the winner of the actor who was in Everything. And then, Janice, you also put down a final award as well.
Yeah, I feel that this is something that is becoming like a cliche almost. So this award is the A24 Scary Movie Award for uncategorizable genre films that are not actually scary. And that award goes to Lamb, the Icelandic film, actually, which I really quite enjoyed. But I think a lot of people, I actually really like this movie, but a lot of people said to me, it's not scary, it's weird. Okay, and so I went in and was like, not scary, weird, not scary, weird. And then I was able to open myself up to the weirdness and all everything else that the film was trying to do. But yeah, as I know you guys have talked about on the podcast before, you know, the A24 cliche is that, you know, it's a moody film and it's only scary in the last 15 or 20 minutes. And yeah, I think that's a cliche that is probably based in some fact here. And I think it can apply a little bit to this film, Lamb, as well. So that would be my special award that I want to give out.
A24, they've got the formula worked out. Thrill them in the last 14 seconds.
Great trailers. Okay, movies, maybe. Well, there you go. Look, this has been such fun, and we've ripped through. There are other categories that you know, we could nominate, but maybe that's 2022's business, and it'll be great to talk about it again with you, Janice. But, yeah, we look forward to touching base with you maybe earlier in another form or category. But
and perhaps in person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. 2022, bring it on. Oh,
yes, indeed. But thank you so much, Janice. It's always great to talk to you about film and to share these categories. And as with you, Simon, thank you so much. This has been such fun. And congratulations to all the all the winners. And, you know, but yeah, we look forward to more great, weird sex scenes and strange deaths in years to come. So, yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.